Later this month, an eclectic group of musicians, composers, and performers will take the stage at Carnegie Hall for the annual benefit concert for Tibet House U.S., the New York-based educational institution and cultural embassy that works to ensure the survival of Tibetan culture. Its curator is also its artistic director, composer Philip Glass, who, in the past 25 years alone, has composed more than 20 operas, 8 symphonies, 2 piano concertos, and concertos for violin, piano, timpani, saxophone, quartet, and orchestra, also string quartets, soundtracks of films, and a growing body of work for solo piano and organ. And it gives me a great pleasure to welcome Philip Glass, who doesn't look all that tired from all that work, back to our show. Hi, Philip.
Nice to see you again, Leonard.
How many years has the Tibet House Benefit Concert been running?
We've been 25 years at Carnegie Hall, but we actually began at Brooklyn Academy of Music. Then we did one show at the Beacon Theater and two at Town Hall. And
so that's then, 30 years.
Yeah, we're up to 30. But for some reason, we counted from Carnegie Hall. I don't know why. It's that old story of how do you get to Carnegie Hall? You know, and the answer is you practice, of course. But
in this case, you practice Buddhism?
Or you practice getting there. But and it has been a beautiful long run at Carnegie Hall.
And have you performed in all of them?
Yes. I was one of the founding members of Tibet House, and the only thing I really had to offer was being able to do concerts, which turned out to be the thing that we did consistently over all those years.
And when was Tibet House created? What's its mission?
Well, the Dalai Lama invited, I think, of Richard Geert and Bob Thurman and myself and a guy named Porter McCray, Avalon, Elizabeth Avalon, another number of people. He invited us to, I think this was in the 1980s, and he wanted to start a series of cultural centers, which he did do. There's one in New Delhi, there's one in Mexico City, there's one in New York, there are a few other ones around. The idea was at the time, this was at the early in the diaspora, the Tibetan diaspora, where when I first encountered Tibetan refugees, that was in 1967 in northern India, and there were something like 200,000 people living in tents. And that this was the people that had escaped from the invasion from China. And I came back to New York, and I met the Dalai Lama's Pinsent Tondon was the representative for the Dalai Lama in New York. And he began making friends among people in Europe and America. And at this point, actually, it's hardly a refugee community anymore. There is a second and third generation of Tibetans living in America now.
But one of the goals, as I understand, is the preservation of Tibetan cultural identity. How much is Tibetan cultural identity endangered?
Well, currently, it's no longer taught as a language in schools in Tibet, believe it or not. Until very recently, the Chinese allowed a bilingual educational program in Tibet. Now there's only one language. I mean,
that's Mandarin.
I don't know what this Mandarin can be, but that's probably true.
Well, because they've pretty much eliminated teaching people Mandarin and Shanghaiese as well. Mandarin becomes the national language.
You know, when you start taking language away, it gets to the heart of any culture. The thing is that one of the things about America is that we've been very good with our diasporas. We have. There's been an Italian one, an Irish one, a Jewish one. I mean, and what we've done, we go to Italian, we go to Jewish schools after school. We go to Italian ones. In fact, one of the things that the melting pot turns out to be a very lumpy melting pot, which has been great for us as a country, because preserving these cultural roots is what has given for me the dynamic of America.
I live in Greenpoint, and when I go into many stores, they speak to me in Polish first, assuming that I, like everybody else, speaks Polish.
Just for your reference, you do not look like you're from Poland.
Do you?
Whatever that might mean.
I have some Polish roots. Do you think that the Chinese government pays much attention to efforts along these lines for people in the West?
Officially, from what I understand, they divide people between the cultural people and the political people. I am considered a cultural person, and I am, have not had any problems playing in Hong Kong or other places like that. There are people who are more politically oriented who are not on good terms with the Chinese and are not invited to go to China. I was invited to go to China, but it happened to be right after 9/11, and at that time nobody was taking planes anywhere, and I didn't go. But I would go. It just hasn't come up.
When you're curating these events, what do you look for in terms of artistic talent? And has the musical focus remained fairly consistent over the years?
It has, especially in the sense that we've had repeat contributors, not offenders, but real contributors. We've had, David Bowie was there twice, Paul Simon was there twice, Ray Davis two or three times, Patti Smith about 12 times.
And so, we're talking about people who are not necessarily Buddhists.
No, some might be. I never even asked them. Mm-hmm. But there's always a Tibetan. This year, Denshin, a wonderful singer from Tibet, will be performing. She lives currently in Geneva, I believe, and is coming in with her ensemble. There's always a group of Tibetan monks who begin the concert with a chanting and as a kind of an open.
But you also have stressed cross-cultural collaboration.
That has happened too. To this program, for example, Fode Suso, who is from Africa, he'll be playing. And one of the things that Iggy Pop is going to be doing is reading poetry to Fode Suso's playing the chord. Now, let me tell you, this is the kind of thing that only happens at Tibet House concerts. One time, years ago, not that many years ago, Gaetano Veloso did a duet with Laurie Anderson. Mm-hmm. You had to be there. We don't record these programs.
That's too bad.
Well, you know, there are all kinds of issues with recording in places like Carnegie Hall or Lincoln Center. And we basically were raising money to keep. There is a fact to Tibet House on West 15th Street in New York, and it is a cultural center. It has exhibits. It has talk, speaking, but we prefer to spend our money on maintaining the center, and not on. We haven't done very good with archiving our concerts. No,
my guest is Philip Glass. We're talking about, well, depending on how you count, either the 26th annual Tibet House U.S. Benefit Concert,
or
at least the 26th at Carnegie Hall, which will be on Monday the 22nd of this month, or it could be the 31st if we go back to the original concerts. But you always bring in new people. There are some younger artists on the bill this year, such as FKA Twigs.
Yeah.
Did she come to you, or did you go
to
her?
I went to hear her in Brooklyn when she was playing in... I don't know where I have no idea where we were, but we were in a kind of open loft space deep and along the waterfront, and I thought she was wonderful, and we got in touch with her. She was surprised I had been there, but I guess I was one of the few people over 70 or over 50 for that matter who was there, and she said she wanted to play at Tibet House. And then there's a young woman, Basia Boulay, who I only know her from, well, this is wonderful. I know her from YouTube. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how we audition people. But I was getting ready to do a concert in Canada. She's Canadian, and I was looking for Canadian performers, and I came across this young woman. I thought she was wonderful. That particular concert didn't happen, but my contact with her, I maintained that and invited her to come here. So there are young people there, too.
And then you mentioned David Bowie. Now, he appeared at the concerts, but then you wound up also collaborating with him on recordings. Does this happen a lot, that kind of cross?
It does, but that would have probably happened anyway. But Iggy Pop I got to know through the Tibet House concert. So I could have known him in the 70s and the 80s, but I actually met him there, and we became collaborators. Now, in the last Tibet House concert, our string quartet, the Scorcio Quartet, played a piece from Mishima, the film soundtrack, mm-hmm. and he wrote a poem and he recited it. And we're doing something like that, but this time we're taking a piece of Fode Suso's and he's written a poem for it. And so he gets to do things that he doesn't get to do normally.
I've always been curious about how you came to Tibetan Buddhism, because it's my sense that your musical roots, to some degree, are in India.
Well, there were,
and you know, that's Ravi Shankar is a Hindu, Bismillah Khan is a Muslim. I can't even think of any prominent Tibetan musicians.
I was some of them have become better known because of Tibet House concerts. When I first went to India, I had just been working with Ravi Shankar in Paris in 1966 or 65. And I went to India to kind of deepen my contacts with Indian culture. And when I was there, I went north to the Himalayas because I wanted to see what was up there. I mean, and those days, by the way, Leonard, I traveled with Joanne Acoletas. We were married then. Wonderful director.
She was at the public theater.
Yeah, that's right, from Mabu Mines at that time. And then we traveled overland from Barcelona. We went overland through Turkey, through Iran, through
up to Lhasa?
No, we didn't get to Lhasa. We got to the border of Tibet. We got up to Darjeeling. Mm-hmm. And at that time, we found we couldn't go any further because the border had been closed by the... There was a Chinese army and an Indian army facing each other, and they were combating each other with... they were broadcasting propaganda to each other, which you could actually hear. We weren't that far away. We got a little bit closer to a little town called Kalimpong. And when I was up there, I was also interested in Gandhi. And my first contact with people that knew and worked with Gandhi was when I was up there at that time. That eventually led to the Opera Satyagraha, but it led to also my contact with the Tibetan community.
Now, you mentioned these propaganda broadcasts at the borders. It happens in Korea as well, North Korea, South Korea. And I'm wondering if certain people are elected president, whether we're going to have this sort of thing happening over the Mexican border or over the Canadian border.
It sounds to me like we're hearing it over CNN and Fox News. I mean, it's a little bit like that, isn't it? And in fact, it's very easy to identify Republicans and Democrats in all parts of the world. It seems to be a popular dichotomy.
Now, I mentioned earlier your body of work, which is immense. And my first thought was, do you get any sleep?
I stay up late and I get up early, but I'm not falling asleep on your show. But
thank you.
I have fallen asleep sometimes in rehearsal. But I find that I didn't mean to get up at 5 o'clock this morning, but I got up. I'm working for some music for the Crucible, which is going to be coming to Broadway.
Oh yeah,
and I've been talking with
amazing cast,
wonderful cast. But I'm working with a sound designer. We were talking about a part of the, and he suggested some percussion music, and I woke up thinking about it, and I said, oh, the hell with it. I got up, went downstairs, and went to work.
Isn't the English National Opera presenting your three-act opera, Akhenaten, which
yes.
Now that takes us to Egypt as well. That's happening next month. Do you get involved in these productions?
Well, in this case, I know the director, that would be Phelan McDermott, who also was the director with he co-directed Satyagraha that was at the Met. Mm-hmm. So I knew, and I was at the NO many times. I was there with two operas I did with Doris Lessing, so I kind of knew them already. But to my surprise and really delight, they decided, they did a memorable production of Akhenaten in 1985 or 86. And that's when I met Doris Lessing and I began working with her. But it hasn't been done in a big opera house for a while. And it's going to be coming to it'll be coming to the Los Angeles Opera. I think it's going there in the fall. So I'm glad to see that. That has been done from time to time in smaller opera houses. But I think in the wake of the recent productions of Einstein and Satyagraha, it seemed to be a logical thing to do, which I'm delighted to find out.
But meanwhile, on the 22nd of this month, a week from this Monday, Philip Glass will be one of the many participants in the 26th annual Tibet House U.S. Benefit Concert at Carnegie Hall. And you can find ticket information on our show page at WNYC.org. Do you know what you'll be performing?
Well, I know I'll be performing with Iggy Pop. And I've been asked to play with Sharon Jones, which I would like to do. I'll see what happens if people ask to play with me. And I've actually, one of the great things, I've learned how to play with all kinds of musicians because of these concerts.
And we're going out with some Iggy Pop.
Good for you.
Thank you so much, Philip.
Thank you, Leonard. It's nice to see you again.